Hello, and welcome to the History of Haiti.
In the last episode, I focused on introducing the so-called main character for the next few episodes, Antonir Fearman. Then, he used the Americans to help his leader Hippolyte gain control of the presidency. In this episode, even more than the last, Fearman's ideas about how to interact with the United States are going to come into play, as the U.S. creates the Mole-Saint-Nicolas crisis. Coming out of the overthrow of Legitime, Antonir Fearman was probably more popular inside the United States than he was inside Haiti. There, many viewed him, and by extension viewed Hippolyte, as solid allies in their own project of expanding U.S. influence. Fearman was called the Haitian Blaine, in reference to the Secretary of State. But inside Haiti, this positivity towards the United States concerned many Haitians. They saw that Hippolyte had come to power with the aid of the United States, and so they accused him of being a United States puppet. A group called the League for Maintenance of National Independence formed, out of distrust towards Fearman. But the main question that both the United States and the Haitian people were looking at was the same. Would the United States get Mole Saint-Nicolas? So according to an American merchant and arms dealer named William Clyde, representatives of Hippolyte had promised to give over Mole Saint-Nicolas to the Americans in exchange for weapons during the war with Legitime. This claim was denied by Fearman and Hippolyte. Similarly, Clyde had negotiated a contract with Fearman that would have given Clyde's company a large amount of money and a monopoly on certain steamboat lines, and which also would have had the Haitian government pay for those lines. Fearman signed this contract, but he never brought it to the Haitian Congress because of the distrust the Haitian people had for his pro-American policy. To try to negotiate to gain control of Mole Saint-Nicolas, the American government appointed none other than Frederick Douglass. For my non-American listeners, Frederick Douglass was an incredibly influential black abolitionist. He was a great admirer of Haiti, which he saw as an impressive example of the success of the black race. He had made plans to visit, but had them delayed because of the Civil War. In fact, after this crisis was all over, he would be chosen as Haiti's representative to the Chicago World's Fair, a large meeting of nations in 1893. Douglass and Fearman met in 1890 to negotiate for a lease of the port. Fearman expressed distrust at the plans of the United States, and so Douglass tried to reassure him that the United States was totally peaceful with its intentions. But these talks went nowhere. In his book, Haiti, The Aftershocks of History, the author Laurent Dubois makes the point that Fearman probably wanted the United States to have Mole Saint-Nicolas. He probably believed that the U.S. was a strong power and would be a good partner, and he probably would have wanted to lease it to promote commercial activity between America and Haiti. But the Americans came at it during the wrong time. Hippolyte was facing enough criticism for being an American puppet that Fearman realized it would be the end of Hippolyte's rule if he gave Mole Saint-Nicolas to the Americans, and so Fearman refused to do it. Frederick Douglass's peaceful negotiation strategy was criticized by many in the United States. He was also criticized for being black. And he seemed far more biased towards the Haitians than the Americans, something which he said himself. When Fearman refused to have Clyde's contract approved, Clyde demanded Douglass pressure Fearman to compensate him for his time, but Douglass refused. The American president figured it would be unpopular to get rid of Douglass, so he kept him as an envoy, but removed him from the negotiations. To pressure the Haitian government militarily, they sent an admiral to negotiate in his place. They did this to give the implication the military force could be used against Haiti. This admiral made a series of threats. What he wanted now was not just Mont-Saint-Nicolas, but for Fearman to promise that no other foreign power would be allowed to control territory in Haiti. These threats culminated when, in April 1891, the admiral arrived in Port-au-Prince with 4 American warships, joining 3 that were already there. This had happened many times before, the most famous of which was the Indemnity. A foreign government, to get what it wants, comes with warships to the capital and threatens to bombard. And every time this had happened, the Haitian leader in power had backed down to that foreign government. But this time would be different. Hippolyte, or rather Fearman, would not back down. He knew from the Haitian ambassador to the U.S. that aggression towards Haiti would not be tolerated by the public. He also knew that the political party in power was not popular. And so, Fearman was able to conclude that these ships were just there to threaten Haiti. So when the admiral made his demands, Fearman issued a response that was a respectful hell no. He said that it was a clear breach of Haitian sovereignty, and that by backing down, Haiti would surrender its independence to the Americans. But he stayed polite. For example, he concluded by praising the Americans. And so, as Fearman predicted, the Americans packed up and went home. He had won. He had bested the greatest power in the hemisphere. This victory catapulted Fearman into the national spotlight. He was now a huge national hero. He was even called a messiah by many. Fearman himself left his position as Minister of Foreign Affairs to become both an envoy to several other countries and to focus on cultivating a group devoted to his ideology known as Fearmanism. This ideology mainly espoused the superiority of peace and democracy to war and military violence. Followers of Fearman included students, people from the middle class, and many soldiers. They all wanted economic and social progress as well as a new democratization of the government. Fearman also influenced the new constitution created by Hippolyte. Haitian leaders, upon taking power through a revolt, had frequently rewritten the constitution to codify promises that had won them the presidency. A common proverb was, quote, "Constitutions are made of paper, bayonets of steel." But throughout all of it, the basic idea of Pétion's constitution of 1816 remained, a strong executive and a bicameral legislature. But the constitution of 1889 made a few important changes, although like every other constitution, it was just a piece of paper. For one, it banned the president from dissolving the legislature, a common abuse of power that had been used by many presidents. It also decentralized the tax system and the finance system to discourage corruption. Finally, it lifted the ban on white people becoming citizens, but it did not lift the ban on white people owning land. Near the turn of the century, Haitian economics did not look much different than it had under Pétion. About 90% of the population was peasants, while the other 10% lived in cities. Of those who lived in cities, many, especially the coloreds, were elites. While the majority of the time presidents had been black, the elites inside the government, even those that had surrounded a guy like Salouk, were primarily colored. These elite families primarily worked in either the government or in the large merchant houses that ran the export boards of the luxury goods produced by the peasants. They were rich, able to amass small fortunes which they poured into building luxury houses and investing in foreign banks. These elites adopted much of the popular French culture, for example, continuing to send their children to be educated in France. Below them, there wasn't really a conventional middle class. The closest thing Haiti had was either the rural bourgeoisie or the urban proletariat. And below them were, of course, the peasants. But there was some level of social mobility. Through a combination of education and an amassing of money, one's family could become an elite over time. The wealth inequality was pretty large, however. And as Haitian leaders like Hippolyte attempted to modernize the country, their efforts were mostly focused on the cities rather than the countryside. This left the peasants primitive and under-industrialized. And there was a lot of attempted modernizing by Hippolyte. He began a project to reform the cities, doing things like introducing clean water. Especially in cities like Port-au-Prince and Le Cap, he attempted to bring the latest technology. He replaced kerosene lamps with electric ones and brought in telephones. He built wharves and roads. A new style of architecture was made for these cities, where an elegant city center was created around the city cathedral. As these cities developed, so did the economy. A relatively new manufacturing industry and an older agricultural industry began to be discussed more and more. Of course, he was still forced into paying large amounts of money due to the indemnity. Hippolyte's greatest construction project, and the one that still stands today, is the Iron Market. The Iron Market, or the Marché and Fair, was a large market built by Hippolyte in Port-au-Prince. Its edifice was originally built in Paris and was intended for use in a railway station in Egypt, but the project was cancelled when it was bought by Hippolyte. Around the edifice are four large marionettes. The edifice joins together two huge iron halls of 22,000 square feet each. These halls were centers for commerce and economic activity. The whole structure was painted red and green. It survived the 20th century, but was unfortunately destroyed in the 2010 earthquake. It was rebuilt in the original style by an Irish billionaire, who claims it is the cultural and economic fulcrum of the city. It was so important that it was reopened in 2011 by former American President Bill Clinton. However, it sustained much damage in a fire in 2018. It still stands today as a symbol of Hippolyte, Port-au-Prince, and Haiti, and is still in use. Florville Hippolyte's rule was relatively peaceful, with no huge civil war-type revolts. However, there were a few smaller revolts led by those still loyal to his old enemy Legitime. Hippolyte was a little brutal with putting down these revolts, especially with his choice to execute many rebel leaders to prevent further revolts. In contrast to the relative leniency failed rebels usually enjoyed, this worked, however, and Hippolyte was able to see a good 6 years of rule. He was a frail 69 when in 1896 he died. Like Pétion, Hippolyte is one of the few Haitian leaders to not only end his term peacefully, but to actually die in office. In modern times, Hippolyte and his Iron Market were chosen to be on the 1,000 gourd bill, which is still in use today. His successor was chosen as a man named Dysius Simon Sam. He was a black person, born in 1835 in the North. He was a member of the elite and had been both a military commander and a minister of war and the navy under Solomon. And he had been a minister of war when he was chosen to be the next president. When discussing this period of Haitian history, it's important to remember that the people in Haiti did not consider themselves a failed state, nor were they considered a failed state. Sure, they were undeveloped, but new technology, ideas, and advancements flowed into the country and had created an atmosphere of hope and prosperity. Most people, especially the Firminists, were enthusiastic about the future of the country, but this makes it all the more tragic that their hopes would be crushed.